All right.
So let's go ahead and get going again. Sean?
Yep.
You want to introduce yourself?
So we're going to, because I think we have some new people in the audience, so we will reintroduce ourselves. So apologize for the rest of you that have already been here. Got to hear it twice. Sean Merzina, Enterprise Office 365 Solutions Specialist here in Houston, Texas. I've been in Houston for about, I think, 5 years now, four and a half, right around in there. Originally Redmond-based. I called it the mothership earlier. I still call it the mothership. But been with Microsoft just over 14 years.
So, Avi Sujit, I'm a customer success manager. Get to help organizations that are launching Office 365 work through things like use cases and start to realize some value. And so what we're going to be doing is we're continuing from our first half of a session, and we'll do just a brief recap to pick up for the people who are joining us midway through. And in essence, what we're doing is we're sharing a model that we are starting to use within Microsoft to try to help drive usage and move beyond just deployment. When we take a look at what we're trying to accomplish within this session, we really are trying to just outline and give you an idea or an opinion around what does it take to be successful, and then some resources that would actually help you deliver that. When we take a look at the framework, we have a four-part framework, right? And at the session prior to this, we worked through setting a vision and identifying business scenarios, and then we started to get into mapping actual usage scenarios. We're going to pick up from there and then move on to the other two sections within this framework.
All right, round two of map to usage scenarios. You want to hit it again?
Yeah.
As it builds out.
One more?
Yep, one more. There we go. So this is kind of where we left off on the last session. Looks like we're regurgitating a little bit of this. But really what this is meant for the people that are just stepping into this session that wasn't through the first part is providing you maybe a framework to work with. So when you kick off your projects, and you're looking to drive consumption and adoption, this is a good framework that you could work from. As we mentioned in the earlier session, we talked about making sure that you have the right audience as you start to build this practice out. And in this case, we've highlighted a few user profiles. I'm trying to figure out where the cord is so I don't echo. But meeting participants, meeting leaders, departments, and it's really framing what they want to, so that, and then what it means, at least the need to the individual user. So,
the goal really is to target so that we're building out our use cases, what that business value is, and give us a leading indicator of what some of the functionality could. What within Office 365 could help us realize that value? So one of the things that we were looking at starting, so last time we had set the expectation, this is a fairly interactive session, right? And what we're looking to do is actually taking a couple of minutes here going through the exercise of practicing or setting up these usage scenarios. So when you look at Success Center, there are five basic scenarios that we have in front. What we'll do is we're going to, since we have five tables, assign each table basically a scenario, and then let you actually spend about 10 minutes to build out your own usage scenario. Does that work?
So I'm going to throw a little bit of a wrench into that, though, because I think the last session did a really good job of where some groups already had a scenario identified and they built around that scenario. So I would even advocate if you already have a scenario, work through that. That way you can walk away with something that's actual. It's not a fictitious role that we've created for you. Okay?
And so
that's my rich.
And that's fair enough. So if there is a volunteer at the table that could frame up a scenario, that would work out as well. And in essence, what we want to do is we want to walk out, and we're going to ask you to share after this section, really, what is that usage scenario? How do you see that aligning back to what the vision was that you set up this breakout with?
And then what we'll do is we'll go ahead if you wanted to use, or if you're like me and forget stuff really quick, we'll roll back one more slide so you can at least see that framework as an example to work through.
Okay.
All righty.
So with that, we're going to take 10 minutes. Tables, if you don't have a starting point, let us know, and we're going to be coming around to facilitate.
You want to roll it back one. There we go. There we go.
Put your shoes on.
Oh yeah, these aren't. Yeah, we've just
Okay. Okay. So let's go ahead. So one of the things that we ended up talking about at the table that I was sitting down with really was around a use case for potentially booking rooms. So training organization, right, exposes rooms out externally. If they don't use the room, what will happen is there's direct revenue impact. So potentially there was opportunity for, as a person who, as a trainer, they need to know the availability of a room so that they could actually request it and know that the facility was actually available to them. The use case, one of the things that I thought was interesting as we started to break out these use cases, how did that process work if you didn't have a strong vision?
Yeah. That's the answer we're looking for. It's quiet. Confused. You just answered it by body language.
Yeah. And so one of the things that we point you to, right, goes back to that green dot, yellow dot, red dot. It's going to start with that person who thinks that, hey, technology can actually make an impact.
Yeah. So the only thing I would recommend is, as much as Microsoft talks about it, always keep a little bit of a pulse on your red dots. And the reason why I say that is I think sometimes your red dots become the most green dots.
Later on,
yeah. And I'm notorious for that. I will resist all kinds of stuff, and then something will happen. It'll be like, oh, why didn't I do this long ago? And then I become an advocate.
Did anyone around the tables, did you come up with a usage scenario that you felt really passionate about that seemed to be pretty compelling that you want to share?
We're testing you to see if you're excited about what you do.
No, we didn't talk about it, but I'll share our own thing.
Okay.
It's OneDrive.
And so when you take a look at your plans, right, as you start to look through, who would be the audiences that have the actual content? who puts the content out there, the multiple versions of truth? Who all is participating?
Well, everything from records manager, people records management authority, to the daily worker that's working out there, to somebody that's keeping information updated about, say, a specific process or a specific chemical process. Yep. And you only want one version of that. If somebody gets the wrong version of that, it's at the wrong temperature or wrong pressure, bad things.
Sure.
So one of your user profiles is definitely, you want to have somebody from the legal team as one of your user profiles in that discussion.
Yep. So we've already got somebody with multiple people with records management globally. We've got like 100 people that are involved globally on records management.
I think one of the cool things though is if you also expand that to include like your manufacturing folk. For example, they're looking for a source that they want information. That's how you build out the buy-in across the team, right, to actually change behavior. Okay. So then let's... That breaks into...
We already talked about that.
Are you just there?
All right. So I touched on this a little bit in the earlier session. Obviously, we're gonna get a little bit deeper here in planning and developing a campaign. Now, here's where we'll talk about. We'll get a little bit. The assumption here is you're an Office 365 customer, and the assumption in this is that I want to try not to get into licensing conversations, but the assumption is, let's just say, you're an E3 customer. Does everybody know what E3 means? I hope you know what E3 means by now. Perfect, okay. So let's just assume everybody here is Office 365 E3 customer. So we want to give you some potentials of solutions that you could maybe use as you kind of build out your campaign. Okay?
And
anything else you want to add?
Yeah, so this is just an example following that framework, right? Of, okay, so now we know what they need to do, which is, hey, just have these online meetings, have a shared calendar, be able to communicate between the campaign team members, and then we can map that back in towards technology.
So this next one here, and I think there's another one that follows after it, isn't it? It's a little bit more granular. No, there isn't? Okay. I'll try to find it, and we'll add it back to the deck that was a little bit granular. But we get this, I think this not only applies to your campaigns, but also think about just everyday interactions. We get this a ton. I get this all kinds, is customers asking, when should we use something when? And as much as we try to say, hey, it's kind of organic, you figure it out yourself, everybody wants a footprint. We're like, how, you know, we want a way to do this. So I think this is a great tool not only for building your campaign, but also to look maybe where the technology could play for you specifically. So, you know, I'm not going to go through all of these, but you can see that, you know, there's a flavor of maybe tracking items could be possibly Office and Outlook, could be Yammer external networks, Yammer internal networks, engaging participants. You find it flows across a lot of these, Office and Outlook.
One,
you know, Office could kind of fall in between a little bit of that, but Outlook's not really something that we would use that often, and hopefully you guys are starting to move away from DLs. I can't stand DLs. We talk about the thing people are passionate about, I can't stand DLs, but that's a Sean Mersina problem. So is this a helpful framework as you guys kind of look at this?
Do you all get the which tool when question a lot? So that as you're rolling out
which tool when? Yeah.
Why is it easier to map which tool when you started to, when we started talking about the link example versus general? Right? So when you get into a specific use case like let's say so I'm going to go back a slide so I have something to talk against. So when we get to this planning and developing campaigns, These options, do they seem pretty self-evident? And so my question is, why is it easy here versus generally defining which tool when? Because everyone asks me which tool when.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there is some assumptions. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure. And we could swap that with the enterprise social, right? Yeah.
And then The other thing, let's go back to the other slide. The
sure.
other thing I'll add to this is I'll actually add the size of your audience too. Your size of audience will drive some of these behaviors. So if you have a very large audience, maybe Yammer Network is a great place for that because you do more of that crowdsourcing and you've got way more interactive people. The one that's not on here, I can't believe it. It's not on here, so I swore it was in a different slide.
These are just the examples.
Is a OneNote.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we have another slide, I think, hidden in that deck that actually has a little bit of a granular perspective. So, you know, OneNote is one of those that's great for a smaller audience as long as you're hosting it in a SharePoint site.
What you were thinking of?
No, it's not. It's
yeah, it's in your office.
Do you guys see it?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. Perfect. So yeah. So hopefully, if you're not, come and talk to me about ask the experts on OneNote. I think OneNote is like the hidden gem of the office application, and if you're not using it, you're nuts. I'll just leave it at that. I'll just say there's just so many ways that you can use it. So. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about OneNote, I am with Yammer too. So, but one of the things that
you'll find is that when you're actually solving a problem, right, then it becomes easy to understand how the technology kind of fits in to potentially solve the problem. Now, it might not all just be Microsoft technology, but this is a lot easier once we actually understand. Okay, here are the different use cases that we're trying to solve. Then I can answer the taking collaborative notes for how that could potentially impact amongst these different products. The thing of it though is how I use SharePoint changes, right, when I'm doing taking collaborative notes versus tracking action items versus engaging participants. And the same goes with all of the different tools. So when you come up with the generic which tool when document, right, you're making an assumption that this is the problem that people are trying to solve. Part of the challenge that we start to see when we start to look at like just the basic technology rollout and the fact that, hey, what we're trying to do is we're just trying to roll out SharePoint, is it has so many different types of uses, it's hard to make a generic statement. So rather than do that, right, what we're suggesting is start out with a use case. So start out with, hey, what we want to do within our organization is through Office 365, we want to help the organization figure out how to make meetings more public, right? And that involves taking these types of actions where how the tools play together makes sense. What do you think about that?
Yeah. And have a different look and feel even. Yeah. So for students, for me, it's, you know, I have to look at who the audience is that's using the tool too, not just the tool itself. So, and the security of that too. Who's in versus external. And who has internet access versus somebody out in Timbuktu that doesn't, you know.
So, yeah.
It matters.
I think that makes a ton of sense. And when you have a use case, approach, you already have your audience defined, right? You also have the problem that you're trying to solve defined ahead of time. And then that becomes, that potentially becomes the first phase. And then as you start to try to tackle additional challenges within your organization, additional use cases, that becomes your phase two. And what will happen, what can happen is by transitioning to more of a use case approach, right? There's a framework that, in for technology that, in essence, maps to, at the beginning, people use technology to connect with each other. Then they start to evolve towards sharing information with each other. Then it goes towards discovering, and then finally innovating. Mm-hmm. And so as your use cases evolve, you'll actually step along the framework to realize what that ultimate vision was at the very beginning that you defined for what you wanted to accomplish within 365. Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
This may be kind of out of the linear slide deck here. When you're implementing something like OneDrive, you know, there's always this conflict between accessible anywhere versus protecting data. What are the types of things within the Microsoft suite that exists today, if you've got the Office 365 E3 and you want to activate OneDrive, but you don't want someone to, say, be able to access OneDrive like from their home PC and just kind of go, you know, to the Office 365 web portal and start downloading documents from OneDrive to their home PC, right? Because your corporate PCs have BitLocker. How do you do that? Does that technology already exist?
Yeah, it's OneDrive is not that granular yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
One of the things that we're also trying to shift towards is moving away from security by access, right? As you heard in the keynote, where you're protecting at your firewall, to moving more along the security for an individual, right? So what does this person have authorized? And so OneDrive right now, you can't keep people from accessing it from any specific area. But what you can do is you can say what that individual should have access to.
That also goes a lot with, I would start to look at our investments around EMS and MDM and what we're doing there. There's actually a strategy why we're doing a focus on app development. So you kind of did take us off a little bit, but I'm just going to address one little thing and we're going to jump back to this. So when you think about data laws that exist per country, that's where the app model is very important. So a really good example, the Outlook app client. It's never going to be built as a native app inside the Office application. The reason why that is with MDM, we want all the storage to sit in the app. So when we're dealing with EU scenarios, you can actually wipe the device and not wipe personal data, and you wipe the app, and it takes all that data. So when you start to look at those levels of granular permissions and DLP and all that other stuff, that starts to come in the MDM packages. Okay, so you weren't in the earlier session, but that's why you want to follow the Office blog. We go into a lot of depth. If you go Office blog, you query on OneDrive, you look at updates, you'll see a ton of stuff around security improvements that we're doing with OneDrive. So, all righty. So you got me off track. I got to get realigned here a little bit. So prioritizing usage scenarios. You know, these are the kind of, I will call them the four quadrants. You know, it's interesting, we haven't really talked about this one too much, the first one. You know, how difficult is it to put a solution in place? So, you know, we always, when we talk about adoption, and you're kind of first going down this journey and this road, and I spoke about it a little bit earlier in the first session was, you know, don't go after the big thing necessarily. You know, go after the smaller pieces, get some wins, and then you start to build that evidence, and then you can kind of build on top of that. So I always put caution to the first one. Added value, obviously, we talked about that in the first session. We kind of started to talk about it in the second session in the scenarios, building out of scenarios. And then impact. You know, what is the impact? And you saw that as the kind of the last column in that sheet we gave you. And then we talked about this extensively in the first session, but definitely some level of leadership involvement. Definitely a top-down approach. But again, let's make sure as we're kind of building that campaign, we don't lose the perspective of the end user and what it actually means to them. And I think sometimes we get caught up in that. The leadership can give us the sponsorship to get us there, get us our investments, and get what we need to get the solution up. But at the end of the day, we've got to build value for the end user. All righty?
These are four major components, right, that you can start to look at every use case that you have put in front of you.
The end goal of it really is to help you prioritize. Makes sense, right? You want to do the things that have most impact, but are the easiest to implement.
Yeah. Yeah. And that obviously is going to vary for, you know, each customer. You have to weigh that out yourselves. We can help you, though. Just ask us. We can help you guide through any of the confusion that may exist. How do you like that? Okay. So I think Avi talked about this earlier. Did you talk about the SMART acronym? I thought you mentioned it a little bit earlier. But you know, again, this goes back to defining your success criteria. You know, I would imagine most of you kind of already do this if you're trainers and adoption leads. But if it's not, definitely think about how do we change that culture and how do we embrace it at your enterprise. And I would even go beyond just the adoption methodology. This is something that we try to subscribe to very heavily. So even with when I'm working with you guys as customers internally, we're talking as a team. What's the SMART? What's the metrics behind it? And what are those success criteria? So hopefully you have some form of this defined. But again, like we mentioned earlier, here's another framework that you can take advantage of. And then obviously you want to choose the one that's going to highlight your success. Okay.
And so this is something that Sean has hit on pretty consistently, right? Best to start and demonstrate quick value. And so that's where we're trying to point you towards looking for the easy, low-hanging fruit. And then once you do that, you can actually work those use cases, the initial use cases, in what we consider a soft launch. And so basically, the difference between a soft launch and a formal launch really is the idea of who you're communicating to. So if you think about it, right, let's walk through like an example that was shared earlier around driving employee engagement, right? And so when you look at driving employee engagement from the Kohl's example that was shared, the objective was to connect up with the retail workers. Trying to do that and trying to set that tone and get them to actually participate in an enterprise social network from a global perspective can be pretty intimidating. But if you actually start with a couple of teams around a specific use case, it gives you an opportunity to get some early wins that then you can leverage to try to change behavior. When you all start driving adoption within your organizations, right? Who's had success with that soft launch approach? Naomi.
Yeah, I think it is actually a better way to go from an enterprise social perspective, honestly, just because I think the ability to rapidly iterate and to learn from what it is that you're doing is really, really important. So if you have that understanding of what's working in a specific area of your business, then you can start templating it out. So that's what happened internally at our company when we started implementing Yammer, which is almost 4 years ago now. We really started looking at what was working in specific departments are sort of resistant to it. Those folks have much more of a sort of a campaign around it. They were sort of the red dots that you got later, right? You sort of started with those green dots and moved it out with a soft launch, and then the yellow dots really sort of they came along with it. And then finally, you know, the formal launch stuff was really about the red dots and moving those people in.
So does anybody else do soft launches at all? Or they're also called, I've heard other terminologies like pilot groups and stuff like that. Early adopters and yeah, and it consists of hopefully business people and not just IT. So those are typically the most successful ones that we see. The other thing I will advertise though is, and I'll pull a little bit of my statement back that I mentioned earlier about where a solution like Yammer could apply to a small audience. I've seen a lot of success where IT departments go, hey, we're going to roll something out, but we're going to do it in a phased approach. So we're going to grab the first 30 or 40 people. We're going to start with IT. We'll just play around with them for just a little bit. Then we're going to start to bring in business people. And then what they do is they create a Yammer group and then start to introduce those business users into the Yammer group as their mechanism for feedback. And then they start to grow that out as they go to full production in the rest of the environment. So it is a good tool from that perspective.
We tried to do that before, one of the challenges gathering feedback is statistics as opposed to using our normal service desk model with that. When they go there for questions, not getting them there, and then what also happens there, and then really guys if they call in on you if you shut that group down, then that's another method you have to
Yeah. So your caught between help desk and this application that
one of the things that we see when organizations drive that soft launch, because the answer is it changes by organization, right? Some organizations choose to, their model is around call deferment. Yeah. So they're happy if the call volume decreases, right? Other organizations choose to actively manage, right, and escalate because they're concerned about the experience and the time towards the ticket actually being solved. What happens is going through the soft launch period with your initial pilot group, it gives you an opportunity to actually set up things like your governance policy and see what would work within your organization.
I don't really have, obviously Avi has a better answer than I do on that. I haven't really ran into that too much. Not that what you're doing is the wrong way to do it, but where I've seen primarily where the call center comes in is when they fully rolled that out into production and it's going out to the rest of the enterprise, then it matures into kind of the call center focus. And the Yammer piece, I've seen more of that, you know, that innovation piece. How does it feel? What's the experiences you're having? Not really a help desk type scenario, but more of what's the experience?
I mean, is this a culture thing?
It's truly a cultural thing. And that's the, we all know, because we've probably all dealt with it, culture change is the hardest, and it's the longest. But at least you know that there's those tools out there that you can trial.
I was gonna say, you know, around measuring success, right? If you're putting those criteria up there around you're actually, you know, figuring out the metrics and measuring that success proactively, then I would think about, okay, if I have that customer support scenario, are people happier? Do they have a better scenario? Mm-hmm.
No, that's great input. Yes?
And I apologize if I missed earlier, so Microsoft and coming out of IT are the combination of failure because the end user thinks that IT is doing it to them, and it just works so much better when you can go find that business user and all of a sudden they're driving the demand and you're doing it for them.
Yeah.
Because when IT launches it and pilots it, they have a very skewed perspective of what the end user does on a day-to-day basis, and that the business user often just doesn't trust that they understand their world. And so piloting it out of the business group is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Making it adopted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one. If it starts, no offense to anybody that's in IT, but if it starts and stays in IT, it always fails. It really does. There's just
It's a perception.
Sorry. Okay, 99% of the time, I gotta think about that. I should never say always because it always comes back and gets us. So these are the three things we're gonna walk through. We've already talked about define and prioritize your solution. We'll jump onto the create your adoption plan, and then we'll go into build a campaign program. How are we doing on time? Do I need to speak faster?
We're gonna need to speed up a little bit.
Okay.
One other quick plug before we start going here. A resource that we have available is this website, success.office.com. So the scenarios that we, like the exercise that we did earlier, the way this website is structured is it's primarily targeted towards end users. So the front page basically talks about a couple of initial usage scenarios that we think end users will find useful, right? And gives them the resources they need to realize that. If you go one step deeper, like around adoption, we actually start to talk about the different types of processes that are involved here. So our framework that we've been sharing around defining a vision, mapping the usage, committing resources, and then iterating is all listed here, and you'll see that there are resources that are available for that. As we're talking about the adoption plan, if you click on the resources tab, you're going to find hidden artifacts, including an adoption plan guide as well as a plan template. So like there's spreadsheets as well as like the plan guide is a PowerPoint that you can leverage for thinking through and building out your own adoption plans.
For training, and I know it differs with some companies because they will block this application because they don't want their employees going out and watching stuff on YouTube. But if you do have, you don't have your firewall blocked for YouTube, the Office channel on YouTube is awesome. A lot of times I tell customers, I don't even need to come in and demo for you. Just go out there and pull it down because everything's there. It's great content. So add that to your Rolodex of training resources.
And users can watch it on their phone.
They can. They can. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
One of the things that you'll see on this site as we start to release new capabilities, we're also going to have those made available in terms of training content. For example, we're recently changing how people access different services, right? With a new feature called the App Launcher. It's basically an opportunity to make applications like the video service, et cetera, a tier one experience within Office 365. And we're introducing, as we look and see our development patterns increase, we're looking to help you from an end user training perspective, and we'll have those training materials published here on this website as well.
The other thing I'll add to this, and for the people that were in the earlier session, you heard me make the statement, and I wish I had it to show you, but when I talk to customers about our Office 365 roadmap and our level of innovation, I put up two slides, and it shows everything we've delivered in a year-long time, and it takes up two slides. The reason why I show customers that is to show them on the one slide, I'm going to just speculate, I should count them out. There's 267 updates that happened to the Office 365 service in 6 months. Okay? Out of those 200 and what did I say, 63? Somebody keep me honest? 67, 77, something like that. The impact to the end user, actual additive capabilities and functionality, were 5. And they were small little things. Like, think about OneDrive, shared with me. That's one feature. So the object of saying that is so you guys don't realize, oh my gosh, we're going to go through this ramp of training, and then we're going to go keep going through these waves of training. The idea is we slowly acclimate your users. So it's a nice gradual process instead of the traditional manner of what would you do? Every 2 years, if you were innovative, every 2 years you'd upgrade, and bam, you'd drop the axe, and you'd go retrain everybody, and you'd lose 6 to 7 months of productivity. Okay? So I just want to highlight it. I think that's a really important piece as you kind of go through this campaign, and I would embed that into your messaging to the business and in users. Okay?
And to that point, right, what... When you look at, and this is an example of one of those project plans that we have in front, this planning phase basically is that soft launch phase. And really what we see in the execution phase becomes executing against these use cases. And it's iterative and it doesn't stop.
Yeah, it's agile. Yeah, definitely when you build your plans out. So how many of you that do project planning have moved to an agile framework? Are you doing that now with your project plans? Where it's continuing, it's not an end destination, it's constantly, you're looking at it, what, probably every couple of weeks, you do a committee meeting and so forth. If you don't, I would recommend that. That's where we've seen the most success, where it's kind of this agile methodology against these project plans, where you're doing what we call sprints. It's like what we do with technology. We do sprints, you know, and we bring these committees together, whether it's probably bi-weekly or something like that, to just take a look at it and adjust if necessary. Okay? Last one. Build a champion program. This is huge, and I know Avi has a ton to talk about this because he is on the forefront of building champion programs. But this is, you know, when we talk about the green dots, the yellow dots, and the red dots, this is kind of what we're referring to is identifying those champions. The day is already starting to blend for me, so I can't remember if I talked about this in the first session or the second session. But one of the things that I look for champions, especially in the oil and gas and energy, is I look for young professionals. Most of you have a young professionals group that, again, kids either right out of college. It's terrible I say kids, but anyway. Kids right out of college, or 10 years less in industry. They seem to be the ones that kind of really like to get into this new innovative technology, okay?
One of the things that we find within champions within organizations is that it's really amazing. They're just about everywhere. And really what you're looking for is it's that person that's bought the latest device, right? That has totally checked into the idea that, hey, technology can make a difference. And so it's difficult for us to identify exactly who it is, but having them self-select and figuring out a way where you can ask them to basically identify themselves has been the most effective, right? Mm-hmm. So as an example, there was an organization that we worked with that was trying to launch Enterprise Social, and the way they started was they asked a question. The CIO said, what do you think we could use Yammer for to help our business? Well, everyone who responded, right, is a self-identified champion. Yeah. And so looking for hooks that where you can get people to identify themselves becomes pretty critical. Go ahead.
And if you haven't seen it, there's a, we'll post it up on the Yammer thing. There's an Azure app that you can run. I forgot what it's called. You can run it against your domain, and it'll show you all the applications. So when you say, oh, we don't have Dropbox in our organization, or we don't have Box, it'll run and look at all of that and pull it all out and show you actually the other cloud services that are being ran in your enterprise. and how much data sits in those applications. Can't tell you what specifically the data is, but we can tell you what it looks like. So grab one of us at Ask the Experts, because I can't remember the name of it, but I can grab one of my colleagues. So the other thing I don't want to miss, though, on the champion piece is I think sometimes we get caught up in, ooh, we've got a champion. Now let's foster that champion. Don't forget to recognize the champion, okay? Whether that's publicly, how it, just make sure you're always recognizing those people. Even if it's simple stuff like, I mean, a little $5 coffee gift card or something like that. You know, keep them engaged. Yes?
I'd say letters back or emails back to management.
Awesome. Yeah.
Out constantly saying, my boss is on my case about this.
Yep. That's great.
One of the things that we were able to do a study for was we wanted to figure out what motivates champions. And what we find is that champions are primarily motivated by the fact that it makes their job easier, right? It makes it easier when other people are using OneDrive. And if I want to also use OneDrive to be able to do things like simultaneously edit, right? That's not something that I'm going to be able to do if another person saves content onto their desktop. And so what happens when we start to look at building out these champions programs, that's their primary motivation. If you give them a way to have that show shine, that's going to drive increased involvement, right? But the other things like recognition and having a formal program are equally important.
And if you have a tool to use, of course we're gonna say Yammer. But if you have a tool to create groups of champions, I mean I wish we could show you our Microsoft network. And most us three are probably champs on 6 or 7 different things. But it's a great way to hear what Steve's doing or Avi's doing and vice versa. It's you know, keeping those champions together is helpful too. Yes, sir.
Some other companies have done is they've made it an elite program.
Yep.
They make these people feel elite by giving them insider information. They might give them insider information on product stuff that they're working on internally.
That's
they
cool.
Might invite them to an executive lunch, you know, to be able to have lunch with an executive. Or they hand out swag, they give people swag, or they name the student. They make it, you know, like a really
cool.
The key part when you start to look at that, right, is really you're trying to build a sustainable champion community, and you want to make it feel special, and you want to surface opportunities where your champions have the ability to affect other people, right? Because they're in it because evangelizing makes their job easier.
We all love to be recognized.
And this basically sets a framework for 5 steps that we recommend for developing actual champions community. Each of those steps, I believe that we've basically walked through just in our conversation.
So does anybody have any good examples of how they've created champions that we haven't talked about or given ideas on? Anyone? Everyone's good? Okay. Thought I'd ask, just to see. There we go.
Okay, so moving on to the next phase, really what we're going to be talking about are just some ideas that we've seen to be successful around driving excitement for an adoption plan. Okay. The key part here really is around focusing around what's in it for them and being able to communicate that regardless of your vehicle. So there are a handful of different ideas that we're going to breeze through around driving excitement and driving engagement. One of the things is the idea of a launch day. Do you all use launch days right now?
Right now is the best time, holiday season.
No.
Yeah. Really, one you've never done a launch event, or?
Never right now.
Yeah.
It's like a.
Oh, I see. I'm
too
sorry.
Many people
oh,
are.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. One of the things that I've seen within the idea of a launch day, though, is you want to tie into how your organization communicates. So, for example, one organization that I work with does quarterly town halls. Tying into that quarterly town hall is a perfect time to actually do a launch day. And one of the exciting things that they did is, for example, with Office 365, is they actually did a photo booth and updated people's photos as they were evangelizing what was happening. Another thing that you want to look at is how you're going to drive awareness and communication, and it doesn't just have to be in Office 365. We definitely think that there's a lot of value for using Office 365 for that, but at the same token, we have some resources here off of the Success Center that'll give you ways to be able to print out your own booklets, right, as well as driving out teasers, videos that would help encourage and encourage mm-hmm. ideation, yeah. right?
There's actually another one that's not listed on here, and I believe it's still active, but it's called HUP Marketing. So Microsoft.com/HUP Marketing has a bunch of content also, as far as posters and so forth.
So one of the things, and this is an example of actually using a town hall. So if you haven't seen this, so there are a couple customers that presented at the last SharePoint conference. Nationwide and Best Buy are two great examples. So Nationwide has done an amazing job with their Champions program, and they actually talked about it at the last SharePoint conference, and that's available on Channel 9. Where what they've done is they've actually created a brand that has made the Champions program exclusive, where people walk around with these T-shirts that say, I'm part of SPOT, right? And they have other people that are asking them now, hey, what does that mean? And how do I become part of the cool kids? And so it's an opportunity where your Champions program becomes sustainable.
Does anyone here go to the SharePoint conference, the last SharePoint conference? You see them walking around with the SPOT shirts. Did you see them at all? A white one. Oh, well. Yeah, I know. I should. Yeah, we should add a picture of the SPOT shirt. Yeah.
So, primarily, when we take a look at the efforts that we're trying to do, right? What we're trying to do is we're trying to drive awareness and increase confidence in the solution. And to your point earlier, right? It works out much better if it actually comes from a business. And so that's why we wanted to start with the green dots, establish early successes, and then give an opportunity to have that expand out. A couple of thoughts around end user training. It's important. But when you look at end user training, one of the things that we're trying to guide towards is this idea of training towards the use case as opposed to training just on the technology. Does that make sense? And because the use case itself, as you work through a use case, right, you actually get to, okay, here's how I would like the technology to be used. You're providing an answer in your training around which tool when, and giving people context of how they could actually leverage these tools in their day job. Exactly. And so one of the things that ends up happening as you start to break out those different training options, right, the bottom here includes some very key points around how to make your training really relevant within your organization. I think it's important that as you start to go through your soft launch, part of what you're going to find are going to be how these technologies actually work within my organization. So like the example around Enterprise Social and the call center and your help desk, right? As you go through that, you're going to find rules that in essence become your entry-level governance. Okay. And these are some words that just come from some of our existing champions that you can see what motivates them and how they started getting involved. So a couple of these actually do not come off of the Success Center, but if you do AKAMS Office Start and Office Training, you're going to find quick start guides as well as some online training that we have available in our Learning Center.
There's actually another one called Smart IT that's public that we make available that you can pull a lot of these cards down from these quick guides. So if you're familiar with like Brainstorm quick cards, they're a lot like those.
I was checking. I thought it was actually on this, but it might not be.
Oh, it wasn't the smart one?
No.
Let's see if it's on. Oh, wait a minute. Is it on the next one? No.
Okay. Obviously, there are several different ones. There are several different resources that we're making available. The key path behind it is that when you start to look at end user training, there are definitely resources that we have that are available out there for you that are part of this deck.
Yeah. So one thing to note is we talked about earlier is, we're kind of going through this evolution. One of the strategies is to consolidate all of this to a single site. So there's really only three sites you've got. You've got blog, you've got roadmap, and then you've got the training center. So, or success center, that is. Apologize. Yeah. The idea is to pull all that into one.
So the Learning Center and the Success Center are actually two separate sites right now. Okay.
All right.
Let's keep on. So one of the things when you start to look about how do we keep this ongoing and how do we keep this exciting, another example that came from Nationwide is that one way that they're giving to their champions to help evangelize to other people is they have this idea of a radio show. And in essence, what they do in the weekly radio show is a champion talks about, okay, here's a use case that I actually saw. And that becomes something that is the starting point, right, that can continue to evolve.
All right. So last one we'll talk about is measure and expand. When did we end? 4:15?
Yeah.
So we're at 4:15 now. So we're going to breeze through this quick, unless you have some questions. So measure and expand, measure progress against benchmark, improve solution based on user feedback. We've kind of already talked about a lot of these scenarios. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So, and I think we can actually wrap on this slide.
Okay, perfect.
The major point here really is around this idea of when you're starting to think about your how you're measuring success, usage is one thing, but we'd also recommend that you try to think about it in terms of the actual business outcome that started out with the vision, right? Because it's awesome that maybe everybody has clicked into OneDrive one time, but how many people are still using Box? Or how many people are still using Dropbox to communicate with partners? Are people actually using Enterprise Social to drive a business impact, like helping you innovate faster, right? What does that look like? And how are you going to be able to measure that type of impact versus just doing Q&A. So it falls back on the idea of scenario-based. And when you're looking at the scenario-based, right, look for the actual business impact that you can deliver. Also have a mix between qualitative and quantitative examples, because it turns out we're all storytellers and we resonate. And when you tell another anecdote, right, that tends to resonate more than just sharing numbers by themselves. You're going to find resources that are available, again on the Success Center that can help you in terms of ways of figuring out and measuring your feedback and usage, including things like surveys. Okay.
And examples and KPI usage. So
we're adding, and this is an area that we're evolving. Yeah. We're adding dashboards in Office 365 to let you know, okay, what is actual usage look like throughout 365. Yeah.
So that's a, you know, a couple of you asked about the OneDrive piece. Those are other areas that we're investing in the dashboards and KPIs to see usage. Yeah.
Right. Is this built in there now? Or?
No.
I haven't noticed it. So.
These.
So I know
no,
the
these
SharePoint.
These are sample right now. I don't think.
The SharePoint dashboard is.
Is the SharePoint dashboard?
Link is
as well.
Okay. Then these are active ones then.
Yeah. So OneDrive.
Okay.
OneDrive, so you have a, you can tell the number of OneDrive sites that have been deployed.
But it's
right
just
now.
It's a storage standpoint of seeing how much storage consumption is being used, but it's not granular enough yet to where you can actually pivot down into those pillars to get granular data. Well, that's kind of that second. That's the second approach where these are pretty flat right now.
Yeah.
And eventually you're going to be able to have the drill down capability. So think about the layered Power BI approach to this stuff.
The other thing is, like you go, we talked about audits before. Something I want to be able to do is know who downloaded what, when, and where.
Yeah.
And that's some metrics available.
Yeah. It's
one of the things that you'll see, because this is an area of major investment for us, is if you go to the public roadmap that we have available for Office 365. What is it? It's aka.ms0365 roadmap, I think. But it is linked off of the Success Center. Yeah. And afterwards, if you come up, I'll show you where it is. But the public roadmap will give you status on some of those projects as they roll out.
Yeah. Yeah, you can just run a search query on Bing or Google Bing it slash and just do Office 365 Office 365 public roadmap. Yeah. So thank you very much. We appreciate your time. We do hope this was of value to you. And again, for everyone that joined us for today, for part one and part two, we greatly appreciate it. Definitely don't miss tomorrow, because we've got some colleagues that are doing some power user training stuff. So their plan is just to do nothing but demos. So our job was to beat you with PowerPoint presentations. And then their job will be to actually come in and physically show you stuff. So, and we, of course, will also be here and available to answer any questions you may have. And we will be at Ask the Expert. So, Avi, you want any closing remarks, sir?
I appreciate your guys' effort and what you're trying to do within your organizations. You all really do inspire me. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Oh, and do please give us feedback on the surveys. What, they'll get an email notification, or how's that?
So, what happens if you go to that website?
There we go.
Then you click on the actual course, and you can give us feedback.
Right. All right.
All right.
Thank you. Hopefully, we'll see you all at Ask the Experts.